This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 233, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And my book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, has been published, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. This week, I'm talking to Anita Stewart about her UFO experiences. Anita first saw UFOs at an early age, and in the 1980s had an abduction experience that changed her life. Hi, Anita. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Simon, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm looking forward.
Now, we're going to be talking about your experiences throughout life with UFOs. And is it that you used to see them often when you were a small child?
Well, actually, the very first time I saw ships in those days, they were round discs shape, was at a birthday party where all the neighbors were gathered in the backyard on a summer evening, and it was like 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. The sun was still up. It was during the summer, and all the adults were there, and all the children were there, and there was a fleet of seven ships that flew very, very close proximity over the whole house, and everybody looked up and was surprised to see them, but not much was spoken about it. Interestingly, though, that was in probably the early 60s. In those days, there were quite a few. I lived in the Los Angeles area, and there were quite a few sightings that were going on, and they made the front page of the newspapers. And it was like not hidden. It was like people are seeing spaceships and they're publishing it on the mainstream media. So it wasn't hidden or, you know, undercover as it seems to be today. And so as a child, I recall sitting on the curb at night in the summer and looking up at the sky, you know, wanting to see another spaceship. So that was kind of my very, very first experience.
So it was almost like a different culture then, because UFOs became that thing. They'd be the end of the news report and there'd be some funny music on it and they'd be saying, hey, this almost like this crazy person's seen a UFO. It changed after that, did it?
It really did. And what was interesting is when I was 18 years old, my brother was in the Air Force up at K.I. Sawyer Air Force Base in Marquette, Michigan. And he had paid for me to, you know, take a trip and stay there for a few weeks. And then he had leave. So he was on leave for a few weeks. And we drove from Marquette, Michigan, back to the Los Angeles area. And during that time, he shared a story about when he was in officer training school up at Lackland Air Force Base, that he was driving home on leave through the desert. And he said all of a sudden he saw these lights, really bright. And he said they were way too high to be a vehicle on the road. But he said he finally pulled over and it was a spaceship that was following him. So that was really interesting. And because he became an officer early on in his career, we would go water skiing. He was at different Air Force bases throughout his career. And one of the lakes we water skied at was close to one of the Air Force bases. So he would come and join us. And of course, we're sitting around the campfire and we're drinking, you know, beer or whatever, and, you know, telling stories. And he would tell stories about, you know, when he was up in the jets. He was worked on the KC-135s where they'd refueled the jets in midair. And so he told stories about how he had seen, you know, UFOs. Then as he climbed the ranks of, you know, he ended up becoming a lieutenant colonel when he retired. He refused, when I would talk with him about it, he'd say, I never said that. So it all changed, right? I mean, it was though that in those days when I was in my teens, in my early 20s, it was just, spoken of almost like, talking about the weather.
I just wanted to ask you something else before we go on to your experiences. But was there a time where your mum said she found bruises on her legs?
Yes. So after I had the majority of my abduction experience and having a hybrid baby, after that, I sat down with my mom one night and told her, I have to share this with you. And she said, oh my God, Anita, she said, a long time ago, I woke up one morning and I had bruises on my upper inner thighs. And there was three of them on each side, like there were three fingers pulling my thighs apart. And she says, and I was so worried your father would find them and see them and think that I was, doing something behind his back. And when she shared that with me, it was so amazing that she opened up, because she had never mentioned anything about any experiences whatsoever. However, she was very, very psychic.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes if the ETs, the aliens, focus on people who have some kind of psychic talent. That's who they like to pick up rather than just anybody else?
Well, here's the thing that really has been coming up into my consciousness lately is she was Rh negative blood type, and I am Rh negative blood type with green eyes. And they say that the Rh negative is not of this world. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard something about that. It's just difficult to know, isn't it? I'm not sure how Rh is different to anything else. You're a retired registered nurse, so you'd know all about that. And in England, it's like with me, I don't even know what blood type I am.
Oh, my. You better find out. Just in case, you need blood. Well, Rh negative is the rhesus monkey factor. And if you're Rh negative, basically, they call it the blue bloodline or the royal bloodline. And apparently, it's genetically modified bloodline. I don't know that much about it, but there's been a lot of Facebook reels on it that I've come across. And I thought, well, that is so interesting. It really is, because she was Rh negative and I'm Rh negative. And she and I, we were best friends. Of course, as a teenager, everybody hates their parents when they're teens, because they can't get away with all the stuff they want to get away with. But she was a cool mom, and she was just as I matured, became a young adult, then we became very close friends. And when I was married the first time, my father and my mother would come over and we'd play poker and barbecue and have our drinky poos, and she was just like my best friend, so I could speak openly with her just about anything, and she never judged me.
Did you feel she had any other experiences, or that's all she would tell you about?
That was the only thing she ever told me about. But I got to tell you, one night when I was 12 years old, I had my best friend lived a block away on a little ranch where she had horses, and it was an older home. And I used to go over and sleep over at her house all the time. We'd get up in the morning and ride her horse in the corral. And one night I said to my mom, I'm going to go sleep over at Heidi's tonight. She goes, no, you're not. And I said, yes, I am. She goes, no, I forbid it. And I said, why? And she goes, don't ask me why. I said, but there's no reason why I can't go over to Heidi's and go sleep there. And she says, her house is going to burn down. I said, what? She goes, her mother is an alcoholic and she smokes, and that house is going to burn down. I woke up that night at 2 o'clock in the morning to the sounds of fire truck sirens. And I look out my window and the whole sky is orange and ablaze. And we all jumped into our car and drove over. I mean, it was just a block away. And Heidi and her sister were basically covered in sheets. You know, they were in their pajamas, but, you know, they slept in their underwear, I guess. And so they were out in the back of the house, but her father and her little brother were both killed.
Oh.
And ever since then, when I was 12 years old, when my mom forbid me to do something, I listened.
Yeah. You got to pay attention when something like that happens.
Yeah, it was uncanny. Absolutely uncanny how that happened that night. She was so, so emphatically strong about forbidding me to go. So that was just a huge lesson.
So from childhood, did you have regular kind of ET contacts? You know, that thing where perhaps they'd show up in your bedroom or you'd see them outside?
I didn't have none of that, Simon. I had none of that other than I was interested. You know, I was very interested to hear the stories what my brother would tell me, and I would love to look up at the sky, but I never recall any visitations. Now, here's something else that's interesting. I don't think I mentioned this on to anyone, is when I was 18 years old, I ended up having surgery for what they thought was a ruptured appendix. But when they got in there, it was not my appendix. It was an ovarian cyst. And it turns out, at the age of 18, I was diagnosed with endometriosis. Now, here's an interesting fact, Simon. When I became a nurse, I started looking up causes of endometriosis. And one of the causes, and it's, you know, there's no absolute knowing of what causes it. But one of the things they think causes it is that the endometrial tissue gets transferred outside of the uterus into the tubes or the ovaries via surgical instruments. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. I talked to a woman on the podcast recently who she had an appendix operation, and afterwards the doctors were saying to her, when did you have the previous surgery? And she said, I've never had previous surgery. And they said, well, your right ovary has been removed and your fallopian tube's been cauterized.
Wow.
They said, but we can't see any scars on your skin from that surgery.
So see, this is the thing that is so amazing to me is I was only 18 years old when I had that surgery. So, you know, how in the world did I get endometriosis at the age of 18?
So how old were you then when the contact started?
So, and I'm going to tell you that my memory is real iffy about dates and times. I live in the present moment, and time is very funny in my life because I've been clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient since 1981 when I had a huge awakening experience after a critical injury. So I'm going to guess that the dates were, hold on, I even took some notes just because I have to. I base many of my experiences in life around injuries or surgeries that I've had. So I'm going to say it was somewhere around, the main event happened around between 85 and 86. So I might have been around 33 years old. And then I had my NDE, my near-death experience in 89. So very close behind that was my NDE. So the main experience was, I'm not sure if you want me to go into that now, but that's 81 was an awakening experience. So that preceded the ET experience. And then right after the ET, I had my NDE. So it was all in the 80s that all of these things happened.
Well, should we start? We'll go in chronological order. What happened in 1981?
Oh, that's a great story. So I lived on a little ranch and I had horses. I've been a horsewoman my whole life. And I was putting my riding boots on and I had this big, huge, what they call a registered quarter horse. He was a appendix registered. So he's part thoroughbred, part quarter. And he was this big, huge horse that was trained for the show arena. But I used to ride on the trails where it was a little rocky. So I'm sitting on my bed, putting on my riding boots, and all of a sudden I get this movie playing in my mind's eye, and it's me riding my horse. He stumbles and falls down this hill, this cliff that we were on, this very high little trail with a cliff on one side. And he fell down and he rolled on me and broke my back. And the next part of the movie is a helicopter landing to take me to the hospital. And all I remember is my back was broken and the helicopter said Los Angeles County. And I thought, well, that can't be, because I live in the city of LA. But it was the outskirts in the San Fernando Valley. So that's the outskirts of Los Angeles. So I went riding anyway, and then we started cantering or galloping, and my horse bucked harder than I've ever been bucked before. I mean, literally, his hind legs had to be straight up and down. He threw me onto a rock where I hit my head on the rock, fractured my skull, I broke my scapula, which is your wing bone. It's the hardest bone in the body to break, because it's a flat bone, and I broke my back. And my horse and my husband jumped off to assist me, and both our horses ran off to a ranch that was about a half a mile down the road. And somebody came riding out to find us, and I couldn't move my legs. And my husband was holding me up. He was sitting behind me with his back on my back just to kind of prop me up. And so the gal that came riding out called the ambulance, and guess what? A helicopter landed, and it was LA County on the helicopter. And I was like, oh my God, because once you get into the mountains or hills where we were riding, it becomes the county. So they flew me into the ER where I used to work at Northridge Hospital. And I was laid up. Took me 2 weeks. I had to be rehabilitated to walk because I had no feeling in my legs and the spinal cord was swollen. And then I was laid up for 4 months at home, and I literally could not bend forward whatsoever. It was I was really, really disabled. My girlfriend brought me a book to read. It was called Quiet Talks with the Master by Eva Bell Werber. It was a little tiny book, and each page was like a question speaking to God, you know. Now, I was raised Catholic, but I was a very rebellious Catholic because I didn't like all the dogma. As a kid, I was forced to go to church, but I just, I didn't believe in so much of what was, you know, being preached. However, when I was recovering at home, I was laying on this recliner. I was in my den, and I had a grandfather clock, and the pendulum was swinging back and forth, ticking, tick tock, tick tock. You know how they make those sounds. And I'm reading the book, and it says, "Be still and hear my voice." And I was really angry that I had gotten that I was so badly injured. And I was angry at God. You know, it's like, how could this happen to me? Why did this happen to me? And so I said, all right, if you want me to hear your voice, you have to make that clock stop ticking. Oh my God, Simon. Suddenly the room became like a vacuum chamber, silent, absolutely could not hear a pin drop. And then this voice comes out of nowhere and says, "I am here to answer your questions, my child." And I'm like, what? And I started asking questions before the thought was even halfway formed in my mind, the answer would come, and the answer would come, and the answer would come. And of course, at that time, I imagined it was Jesus talking to me because I was raised Catholic. You know, maybe if I was Buddhist or, you know, Hindu, it would be somebody else. But so I imagined it was Jesus talking to me, and I was told, you are here to do healing work. I was like, what? And of course, I was a nurse at the time. And I said, well, what am I supposed to read? What am I supposed to study? What classes should I take? And he said, none of that. He says, you just need to get your ego and your personality out of the way, and we will do the work through you. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. So for one solid year, Simon, I was led, guided, and directed by Jesus. That's who I thought it was. And I was told to go buy a healing table. I was told to invite my girlfriends to lay on the table and for me to just allow the energy work to come through. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know anything about energy medicine at the time, hadn't read anything on it. At the time, I think Rosalind Breyer was kind of the lead person known for energy medicine. And so I did. I got a table and I invited my best friend over, and she came over and laid on the table, and my hands started moving and scanning her body, and I could feel and I could sense and I could see energy. And I got to a place on her pelvis, on her abdomen, lower abdomen. And I said, oh, Rachel, you have endometriosis. And she says, no, I don't. And I said, yes, you do. Because I was feeling, my hands were over her pelvic area, and it felt like black tarry substance. It was thick and gooey, and I worked on it. Well, turns out she hadn't had her menstrual cycle for almost 3.5 months. And she said, well, that's interesting, because I haven't had, you know, my menstrual cycle. So I worked on it. The next morning she called me. She says, guess what, Anita? I started my period at 2 a.m. in the morning. I said, you're kidding. She said, no. A few weeks later, she ended up going to the gynecologist, and he said, you have endometriosis. That was my very first experience with energy medicine. So I became a true believer because, you know, the evidence was, you know, quite vivid.
Yeah, it's like when your mum said the house was going to burn down, and it did. It's a confirmation, isn't it? It's not just you're making it up and then you just carry on with your life and there's never anybody calling you back and giving you confirmation.
True. I mean, you know, you just, it's like you can't make this stuff up, right? It's just proof. It's validation. It's constant feedback and validation. And so I started, you know, dabbling in it. And, you know, little by little, I bought a few books, but mainly it was the work would come through me. And to this day, Simon, I am amazed at what comes out of my mouth and what my hands and the energy work do. So when I do a session with a client, whether it's by phone or in person, I go into a meditation and I do a solid page of automatic writing, which is a message. I call it a healing message that's brought forth from source for the client. And I'm not kidding. It's never not been 100% accurate. And it just comes, you know, just comes through automatic writing. And it's, I stand in awe as the observer. And so my belief in source, God, spirit, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, the all that is, I absolutely know it is brilliant beyond imagination. And then the healing work, you know, I go through with people and can tune into their energies and see energy patterns and blockages. And, you know, most of what, you know, 95% of our habits and patterns are run by subconscious beliefs. So that's what that work is all about, is really just helping them to shine the light of their own awareness on, I call them hidden treasure chests, things that we've buried as children, you know, things that a traumatic event that happens, and then we have an emotional response, and then we form a core belief about it. And then that core belief becomes buried because it's always about, I'm not enough. I'm not lovable enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough. It's always, I'm not enoughness. And so that's what the work is just to help to clear those patterns, beliefs, concepts, and habits so that they can, you know, move through life with ease and grace and peace and joy, and begin to, you know, follow what makes them feel fully alive.
If we move forwards, how soon after that does that awakening does the UFO stuff start? And do you think it's related?
No, I don't. You know, it's really hard to know, because this was, so it was about 80, I'm going to say 86, maybe right around in there. So we had moved after I broke my back. We ended up because I was out of work and my husband was in between jobs. We ended up having to sell the house and yada, yada. So we moved to another house and sold the horses and all that. And in this new house is where the ET experience happened. And my husband went on to, he went from, this is my first husband. He went on from being LAPD and then he left because it was such a negative job for him. And he became a paramedic with the city, Los Angeles City Fire. So we moved to this other house in, so he was working, and they would work 24-hour shifts, so he'd be gone all night. I had a dog with huge Doberman named Max, and I had a cat. And when my husband was at work, the dog and the cat would sleep on the bed with me. So this particular night, the dog was on the bed, the cat was on the bed. And I don't know what time it was. I'm going to say somewhere around 1 a.m, maybe 2. I don't recall. But it was after I had kind of fallen asleep. I was awakened by the sound of footsteps in my hallway approaching the master bedroom. And we had peg and groove wooden floors, so they creaked. And I could hear the wooden floors creaking and hear footsteps coming into the room. And I turn to look at the dog, and he's paralyzed. And I look at the cat, and she's not moving. And I'm looking at the animals going, what in the heck is this is happening here? And as the footsteps get closer, I have fear, just like somebody's in the house, and the dog is paralyzed. And all I know is, like, in a nanosecond, I was on board a ship. And it was in a very large room, and I was on a surgical table, a stainless steel surgical table. And my head was in like a donut, like when you have a massage and they have a hole there for your head. And so I was laying flat on my stomach, and I could see, my eyes were open, but I couldn't move my body, which to me didn't make sense, because if you're paralyzed, I'm thinking your eyes are closed. And I see these two pairs of legs that are thin, real thin, and they're gray, and I couldn't tell if it was skin or if it was material, but it looked like spandex, like a tight spandex material. And all I could see was like from maybe the knees down. So, but I could tell because the table was low that they were short, and I never did see above the legs, but there were also two or three, I'm not sure, other beings at my hip area, And they were doing procedures and I'm not sure I could even describe, you know, what they were doing, but they were just, it was just felt like, you know, invasive procedures. And, you know, I was immobilized and I couldn't, you know, move, but there was, I could feel they were probing areas in my body. And they communicated telepathically that not to be afraid, not to worry, you know, they weren't going to hurt me. And I was like, okay. Of course, I didn't have a choice in the matter. So the next thing I know, I woke up in my bed. And the dog and the cat were fine. And then by the time my husband came home, I told him about what happened. And he, I don't know how he could believe such a story, right? Like, was it a dream? I said, no, it was not a dream. This was as real as it gets. Now, that was just the beginning. That was the major event, but it was the beginning of what turned out to be close to or a little longer than a year of ET communication. And how they communicated was they had placed some sort of a communication device in my ear, and it was in my right ear, and they would speak to me in my right ear. And it was almost a robotic, almost like an AI sounding robotic voice. You will do this, you will do that, you will not do this, you will not do that. And they had said that, told me that I had made an agreement before coming into this lifetime to become a solar powered human being. And I was like, well, that's interesting. And they said, you won't need to eat food to sustain, you know, your body requirements for energy and metabolism. They said, you just need to be in the sun at least an hour a day. The top of your head needs to be exposed, like don't wear a hat. And I said, well, what about when it's cloudy? And they said, oh, that's okay. The rays still penetrate through. So they were literally making adjustments in my brain, in my pineal gland and hypothalamus. And what was really interesting is I looked up pineal gland, and it's what causes horses to shed their skin. I mean, their hair, dogs, cats, horses. You know, the pineal gland is responsible when the daylight becomes longer. You know, it's just like all these things were kind of like making sense, but I was like, this is so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you, did you ever doubt this? Did you ever think I'm going crazy?
Well, yes. I mean, it was so hard to believe, but it happened. I mean, I could not deny it happened. I mean, the fact that the dog and the cat were paralyzed and were not moving when the noise was happening in the hallway, what was probably just about 5 feet from the door. I mean, normally my Doberman would be, you know, he was a protector and he'd be barking his head off and, you know, but he wasn't moving and the cat wasn't. I mean, that to me was probably more phenomenal than the fact that I was on the ship. I was like, how can they paralyze my dog?
Did you ever find yourself on the ship again or with something in your house?
No, not in that way. There were other ways that it happened. I mean, this went on. So there was this process they were taking me through. And the process included certain ways of eating and drinking and dietary changes I had to make. They wanted lemon on every food that I ate. Like if I had a salad, it had to have lemon juice, fresh lemon juice. And they also, this was really cool because I loved avocados, but they They insisted I eat half of an avocado every day with lemon juice squeezed in it. And they said, your science has not yet discovered the benefits, the full benefits that the avocado has on your body. So that was cool. I liked that. But little by little, there were things they wanted me to stop eating, and meat and chicken were one of them. You know, so it was kind of going, you know, little by little to this more like a vegetarian and pure diet, which for me, yeah, that was not easy for me because I was a meat and fish and chicken lover. But I was going along with this because I felt phenomenal. Literally, people would say, Anita, I don't know what you're doing. I was losing weight. I lost like 35 pounds. And of course, being an ER nurse, you know, you eat and drink horribly because you're eating on the run all the time. And so I'd gained some weight. And then I lost all this weight and I was feeling fabulous. I had energy beyond anything. And people kept saying, Anita, you're glowing. It's like you're just glowing. And then, you know, they were talking with me and they would tell me, do this, do that, go here, go there. You know, and just the things that I was being shown were happening, like premonition wise. Like they, one time it was Easter and they said, we want you to drive out to Agua Dulce. Well, it was Easter Sunday, and little did I know they were having this huge Easter celebration there. And this place was a very famous place where they used to film Western movies. And I was driving out there, and all of a sudden, and of course, it's Easter Sunday, and there's no traffic on the freeway. All of a sudden, there's a line of cars, and they are guiding me. I didn't have a cell phone. There was no GPS, you know, cell phone to follow. I'm just, they're telling me, drive here, drive there, turn right, turn left. And as I'm getting closer to the off-ramp to go to this Vasquez Rock County Park, there's a line of cars. And I'm thinking, you know, I was thinking of that movie, you know, where all those people were, I can't remember the name of it, they were all following that guy to that mountain.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, it was like that. So I'm thinking, well, we're all being guided. And so I drive in and I pull in the parking lot and somebody got out of the car next to me. And I mean, it was packed. And I said, excuse me. I said, why are you here? What's going on? And he says, oh, it's an Easter Sunday service. And I went, what? And oh my God. So the whole reason they took me there was they took me there to show me a past life that I had had in that area as a Native American woman. Now, I'm not going to go into that because it's a too long of a story to go into. But they told me, just wait until everybody leaves, and then we're going to take you on a hike and show you where you were killed in one of your past lives. And anyway, so that was another interesting thing that happened. They actually... there was a raven that was flying above my head that took me on a tour. All right. Those were kind of the things that were going on. They would take me places and show me things. And all along I'm feeling, you know, full of energy and full of, you know, and losing weight. And anyway, as time went on, my friends, close friends and family, I mean, I didn't tell most of my family other than my mom, but I, you know, they were starting to think, you know, things are getting a little kooky here, because about 3 months after I was on the ship, I found out I was pregnant. Now, my husband had had a vasectomy, so he couldn't have gotten me pregnant, and I hadn't been with anybody else. So they told me that they had impregnated me. And that I was carrying a hybrid. Now, I'd never heard that term before. And I'm like, I'm carrying a hybrid. It's a half and half, they said. So at the time, I was like looking pregnant, feeling pregnant, walking like I was pregnant. And I was kind of excited because I felt like, well, you know, I had endometriosis, so, and my husband had a vasectomy, so doubtful I'd ever get, have a baby. And at first I was under the impression I was going to keep the baby. And, you know, I can't remember if they literally said, you know, yes, you can keep the baby, or whether it was me wishing and hoping. But the bottom line is, I thought I was going to keep the baby. One morning, I woke up and my husband was at work and the baby was gone. My stomach was flat and the baby was gone. And I was crying and crying and crying. And they said, yeah, well, we're going to raise her here. And she is going to be raised here. So anyway, they said, someday you'll meet her. And I don't know if I ever have or not, because I was never formally introduced. But I got visions of her at times, you know, that she was, you know, at times I would kind of see a vision of a blonde. She was blonde hair and big eyes. And I would just see visions, but that was all. And so that was really upsetting. And, you know, but I guess, you know, I just accepted the fact. And actually, you know, kind of looking back from now, you know, it was a good thing that I didn't have a child.
Was there a time where you, was it like directed into the desert with a couple of friends and you saw a UFO?
Well, yeah, because they were getting frustrated that I'm having all these conversations and being led, guided, and directed by the voices in my head. So they said, well, we want to see the spaceship. And so they directed me back out to that same place, Vasquez Rocks County Park. And it was myself, my husband, my best friend, the one that was the first one that laid on my table, Rachel and her husband, Duncan, and then one other girlfriend. And they took us out there. They said, you have to go out there after midnight when there's less electromagnetic interference. And so we will take you on a journey into the park where we will show ourselves. And so we went there with binoculars and flashlights because it was pitch black out. It was a night when the moon was small. And so we went out there and I told everybody, I said, they told me to tell you that if for some reason I disappear, not to worry because they're going to take me on board the ship. So I'm walking and all of a sudden I'm kind of putting my hands out to feel energy because I started feeling this vibration frequency really, really intense. And Rachel was right behind me, maybe about 3 feet behind me. Both of our husbands were kind of up on a hill, maybe 50 yards away, looking at us through binoculars. And we all saw the ship. The ship was up there doing it kind of like zigzagging back and forth and, you know, showing itself to us. And that's when I started feeling this intense electro vibration. And my body started shaking. And the next thing I know, I feel this big, like, I don't know how to explain it. It was just like this intense, like a shock. And when that happened, Rachel was knocked down. She was knocked backward and fell backward. And I disappeared. I literally vanished. My husband and Duncan were looking at me through the binoculars and they both turned to each other and said, oh my God, where did Anita go? Well, I was gone for I don't know how long, but then I was back. And I don't recall being on board the ship. I think I just dematerialized. But I don't recall being brought on board the ship. But the ship was up there. It was in the sky above us and it was zigzagging back and forth and making sure that we saw it. So that was an intense experience and everybody saw me disappear. Like poof, I was gone. And Rachel was knocked to the ground.
And they saw the ship as well, so they got what they asked for. They wanted to see her.
Yes. Yeah, so then they all believed. Like I believed. It's like, I do believe.
It's just amazing how this is all coming together. So what happened next? Did it develop into some other type of contact? Did you continue to have the voice in your ear?
The voice was there for quite some time. As things progressed, there's one thing that happened that was pretty intense. And they told me that I had to go see, she was a TV minister, Terry Cole Whitaker, who was very well known here in California. She had a Science of Mind type of TV show, you know, where she did a Sunday service. And she wrote a book called What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. And she was very, very well known and very famous. And she was doing a talk at Universal Sheraton. And my ETs told me I had to go and see her. And they said, we want you to go and share the story about your baby. And so I asked my girlfriend, Rachel, to go. And we went. And they said, after she's done speaking, we want you to go up to her and share the story with her. And so she came down off the stage and she was autographing copies of her book. And I went and she was, you know, surrounded by a crowd of people. What was interesting was suddenly it's like all these people kind of parted, like the Red Sea was parting. And I could look directly into her eyes. And from a little distance, I said, I have a message for you. And she said, can you stay after all the people go? And I said, yes. And so after everybody left, I went and sat down at a table with her and said, I was told, and I told her about my abduction and being and having a hybrid baby and the baby being taken. And she looked at me and she said, oh, you're the one they told me they were going to send me. And I said, what? And she said, I'm supposed to invite you to Maui on my week-long retreat. Can you go? And she gave me the dates, and I made arrangements with my boss. I said, if you don't let me go, I'm quitting. So I went to this retreat on Maui. The reason I had to be there, they told me, the ETs told me, was that for this transition to take place, I had to be exposed to a Lemurian power crystal that was buried off the coast of Maui. Now, I'm like, okay, I'd never heard of that before. So I was there at the retreat, and the owner of the property lived there on the property, and I asked him, I said, have you ever heard of anything about a Lemurian power crystal that's buried somewhere off the coast of Maui? He goes, well, yeah, of course. He says, it's buried right here off this property, and that's why I bought the property. I'm like, are you kidding me? Again, validation, right? So I'm standing, they directed me to stand on the cliff above the ocean there and to put my hands out and imagine the energy from the power crystal coming in and pulling the energy into my body. And so as I'm doing this, I literally levitated. Now, I mean, it was kind of like when I dematerialized. I was shaking. I could feel the energy. It was intense. But I literally levitated, and I maybe about a foot or so. I never looked down. And they said, no, you don't need to look down. You're levitating. I was like, wow, you know. But for me, again, validation, right? I would have never gone to see Terry Cole Whitaker. I would have never, I mean, that never would have, and then I ended up going to a, you know, $1,200 retreat for free as her guest. I mean, these things just, you know, you can't explain it any other way.
So did this voice in your ear, did it start to get annoying in a way? Was it always talking to you? Did it direct you to do stuff and you felt like, you know, I don't want to do that?
You know, Simon, that's kind of where the straw that broke the camel's back started in, because there was just certain things that, you know, I got tired of being, do this, do that. You know, it was almost like I didn't have an independent life. You know, they were directing and guiding me to do everything. And when I did do things on my own, you know, they would kind of correct me, or things would be in, I would be stopped in some way, shape, or form. And then I had a celebrating our anniversary, our wedding anniversary one night, and I decided I was going to bake a chicken in the oven and for dinner. And at this point, I was not supposed to be eating chicken. So I did anyway. And literally, they would not allow the chicken to cook. I mean, I put it in at the right temperature for the right amount of time. And when I took it out, when it should have been ready, it was like rubber. And I was pissed because I'm like, okay, I'm having my anniversary dinner and I'm going to have chicken. And so I took it outside to the barbecue and I put it on the barbecue and cranked the barbecue up and cooked it some more and cooked it some more and took it off, and it was still like it had never cooked. So that was kind of like, okay, this is no longer fun for me. And, you know, I mean, looking back now, I mean, it was a great diet to be on. And, you know, it shouldn't have been the straw, but I think just that, plus it was hard for me to really fit in, you know, in this 3D world. There were things that I would know ahead of time, and they showed me, they said late in the late 2020s, there was going to be a massive earthquake in the LA area. And they showed me, I had a vision. I mean, it was like, they showed me like a movie of, you know, there was one building standing and the next one was crumbled and the next one was standing and the next one. And then I started like, this is no fun. This is not fun anymore. And it kind of ruined one of my relationships with a really wonderful ER doctor that I knew, because I called him. They told me I was going to be studied at one of the universities after I turned into a solar powered being. And so I thought it was going to be UCLA, and I knew the director of the ER, and I gave him a call on his home phone. He, you know, he was thinking I was losing it. So, you know, this things were just not fun. And then I couldn't get them to stop, you know, with all the, you know, do this, do that. And I started going to a support group for abductees. And somebody had suggested, oh, I know, there was a period of time where I was getting headaches. And so I had ended up having an MRI of my brain. And during the support group that I was involved with, they said, you know, Whitley Strieber was doing a study on implants. And the MRI of my brain showed an abnormality that was unexplainable. And so somebody said I should tell Whitley Strieber about it because he was doing a study. And I was able, they gave me his contact info, and I spoke with him. I spoke with his wife, got the, had copies made of the MRI, the actual, you know, pictures, and had those sent to them. And, but I never had any follow-up from them, so I don't know whatever happened with that.
Well, it's been great talking to you. I hope we can do another episode when your book comes out.
Oh, that would be fabulous, Simon. Well, it's really been a joy getting to know you. I've watched some of your videos, and I'm so impressed with, you know, your level of knowledge on the subject matter.
Oh, thanks a lot. That's nice of you to say. Yeah, thanks again, and we can talk again.
Very good, Simon. Have a blessed day.
And that was an interview with Anita Stewart about her UFO experiences. My book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, has been published, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or on Kindle. It's on Amazon, and you can get the audiobook on Spotify and other places as well. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes.